Enough is enough! I have had it with these monkey fighting snakes on this Monday to Friday plane! Everybody strap in! I'm about to open some freaking windows.
Making her debut as our latest cultural ambassador, the urban designer Rebecca Kittle, who's with me in the Wellington studio. Kia ora, Rebecca.
Kia ora.
Welcome to Nights.
Thank you.
I actually promoted you as an architect, and I thought I'd kick off this discussion by asking you what you think an architect is.
Yeah, it's an interesting question because I'm not an architect. And,
yes, I've just discovered this off air.
Yes.
I won't feign too much surprise.
Okay.
I saw the warning signs. But anyway, tell me, you got halfway through an architect's degree. Then
yeah,
what happened?
So I was also at the time working for Housing New Zealand, actually, in their policy team. And at the time I was studying architecture and I got a little bit disillusioned, actually, with the fact that a lot of architecture... at least at that time, it is very much about creating sculptures for rich people. And I guess my sort of motivation for studying architecture in the first place was really about how do you kind of create places that people can have a sense of pride in, and not just those who can afford to choose where they want to live, but those who can't afford to pick and choose where they want to live. How do you create those kinds of places?
So, and that in a way is more challenging because if you've got the money to pay for it, then you can pay for the best designers, you can pay for the best materials, you can find the best location.
Mm-hmm.
You got it made. But
yeah.
Those who don't have the money, they just take what they're given often.
That's right. And I think working for Housing New Zealand at the time, I was really interested in a field trip we did out to Porirua. And of course, Porirua is the subject these days, today, of a regeneration project. So
yeah.
The government's investing a whole lot of money in there. But it just struck me that you've got, there's a real sense that creating home for people, or places where they create their own home, because I think the architect has only a part of that role. They're almost creating the scaffolding for people to kind of imbibe their own identity or sense of place or attachment onto these spaces. But I think often architects think that they're the artist, they're the sort of person that creates the masterpiece. And I, just to give an example, I was doing a bit of work with a group up in Auckland and doing a sort of master plan for a papakāinga or a sort of village development in South Auckland. And one of the things they said about the architects that we were working with is, hold on, you're not the, this is our baby, you're just the midwife. And I thought that's a really nice kind of analogy for what I think the role of an architect should be. So yeah, maybe that's my answer.
which makes more sense in terms of what you want to talk about tonight, as the first thing you wanted to talk about, which is the concept of the third place.
Yeah.
Now, I've heard of the third world. Is the third place related to the third world?
No, not really. So there was a sociologist from the US, Ray Oldenburg, who came up with this concept, and he said that we've got three places that we inhabit in our lives. The first place being our home or our domestic space. The second, our sort of work or productive space. And the third place is sort of where community happens. It's where we, you know, get mates or find mates or make friends and sort of feel known, feel a sense of kind of attachment.
What, the place where we socialise?
Yeah, socialising, yeah, places where we socialise.
Examples of that could be the pub,
mm-hmm.
could be your civic square, could be a sports field. Are those odds as a playground a third place?
Potentially, yeah. So, perhaps just to give you a bit of background why I got interested in this. So I've returned home about 4 years ago after working in China for 3 years and before that in the UK. And I was just really kind of taken with the fact that people use the public realm, the urban realm, in a way that we New Zealanders don't. So you know, in the UK, you do have a pub, and you know if you go to a village that there's going to be a local, and if you go to the local, you might meet some locals and potentially build some connection. In China, at dusk, you always knew if you went kind of, you know, half a mile down the road or whatever, you would see a whole lot of people gathered together dancing on the street for exercise. But it was also to gossip, and it was to, you know, talk about the day, or, you know, who's done what to who and whatever. And it was sort of another example of a third place. And I remember coming home for my interview for the job I currently have, and staying in the James Cook just next door, and walking downtown on a Sunday evening down Lambton Quay, and I was the only person on the street.
Yes.
Yeah. So
the Lambton Quay is maybe an example of an extreme example, because the people who work, well, most of the buildings are office buildings and people don't live in them.
Yep.
So they've gone home, and on the Sunday they're not there, and there's not a lot of shopping on a big chunk of Lambton Quay, because shopping must be a third place activity, isn't it?
Potentially, although Oldenburg's criteria for what makes a third place is they've got to be kind of neutral ground. And so if it's kind of built around, although pubs are too, I guess, but if it's built around some kind of transaction where you have to have enough money to be engaged in that place, it's a bit more tricky to call it a third place, I guess.
Does that mean generally a third place is going to be outdoors?
No, it just has to be a place where you can be and not necessarily have to make a transaction. So some cafes will take on that quality, for example, if you're allowed to perhaps sit for a while and work, or, you know, some people will perhaps just buy one coffee and they sit for 4 hours doing their work or whatever.
So perhaps JK Rowling.
That can perhaps, you know, sort of fit into that category.
In other words, if I have to go in, or say another way of looking at it is, if I can't park outside unless I'm a customer, mm-hmm. it's not quite a third place, using the driving their parking analogy. For some reason it came into my head. If I have to go in and I have to carry out some kind of transaction, although a pub, I guess you can go into a pub and you don't have to drink.
No, you could just ask for a water and lemon or something.
Yeah, you might get a scowl.
Yes. Yeah, but I guess in the thing that I was really interested in is where do New Zealanders make friends, I guess? What are our third places, and with dance being the kind of metaphor for socialising, I guess. And so I remember asking someone, one of my colleagues, and I said, oh, where do you think our third places are? And he said, Mitre 10, which I thought was a really interesting response. But if you think about that, it's not, you have to own a house for Mitre 10 to be your sort of third place.
Yeah, generally.
Yeah.
Or have some sort of building project on the go.
Yeah. But there's a really interesting paper that came out of Massey up in Auckland, and they were talking about the school gate being a third place, for example, because kids, you know, go and pick up your kids. But again, if you don't have children, you're likely to, you know, look odd hanging out at the school gate trying to make friends, you know.
Sports fields and sports stadiums must be third places then.
Yeah, I think rugby fields probably are, netball courts, you know, hockey fields, that kind of thing. I think the other thing is beaches.
Yes.
I was just talking to some other people recently, and they were talking about sort of the beach at Oriental Parade being a place where they sort of congregate after work, and someone turns up and they say, hey, come and, you know, let's kind of gather and talk or whatever.
And I'm thinking of walking tracks and tramping tracks as well.
Yeah, potentially.
Yeah.
But I guess what's particularly I find interesting is that our suburban settings are really focused on that domestic space. There's often not much of a mix in terms of the types of spaces available to people. So you get this overwhelmingly domestic space in suburbs. And often the first and the third place then are the same thing. So we invite people into our homes, our first place, and that's where we do our socialising. But there's the problem with that then is that we tend to only invite people who are like us. We don't tend to, you know, ask people who are not. So there's this greater kind of pre-selection that happens. So it's quite tricky then. How do we kind of build relationships across communities, across cultural communities or whatever, if everyone's inviting people into their own space? I think the other problem is if there's no kind of obvious third places available, it's probably quite hard to kind of mix and mingle and become integrated into that community.
And beaches and swimming spots are probably quite seasonal.
Yeah.
Somebody else, I had a little whisper in my ear from somebody, I think his name is Andrew, who suggested dog walking in suburban space. That's when you sometimes meet other people.
Yeah, definitely.
I don't have a dog, and I don't tend to walk the cat, but there is a neighbour, though, who I've come across in the middle of the night, and he's sitting there with my cat, because my cat waits for me at the top of the steps. And he's sitting there having a little chat or whatever with a cat, just hanging out with a cat, and I've met him through that.
Yeah.
So I guess sometimes cats might break the ice too.
Well, in the middle
of the night.
We have a dog, and that's pretty much the only way my husband, who's English and has arrived in this country 4 years ago, has met people apart from his work through dog walking. So that's definitely one. And in fact, one day he saw someone walking their cat as well.
Up
on the town belt. So it is possible.
But on the whole, I think you're right. We don't, particularly in suburban areas, we don't, if unless there's a game of sport on somewhere, I'd like to come across a crowd of people who are just hanging out doing stuff most of the time.
Yeah. And I think the reason for that, if I compare the way that other countries use space, and I'm not suggesting that all the other countries have got it right and we've got it wrong, but I do think we have given ourselves far too much private space, particularly outdoor private space, so that we're never compelled into the sort of public realm and, you know, to have to kind of interact with others.
Why does that matter?
I think it matters. I think it's going to matter increasingly with things like climate change, with potential disasters and things. So these geographical communities or places where community can be created are about resilience, really. They're not only about kind of staving off loneliness, but they're also about building kind of resilience in case of these kind of, you know.
Isn't the third place now increasingly online? That's where it's all happening, isn't it?
Yeah, there's social media. There's a bit of work going on around that, actually. And I think, yes, that's true. And I guess I wonder whether we, though, always will want actual face-to-face interaction and actual face-to-face kind of friendship building. I'm not sure we'll ever kind of lose the desire to do that. So we do need some kind of space in which that can happen.
Does it worry you that, because you said something interesting before, you said if the home becomes also the place we socialise, then we tend to only invite people in that we already know. We don't go outside of our own bubble, which is another thing people talk about on social media. You've got your bubbles online. You don't go outside them. And for some reason, that even seems to be even more reinforcing of your worldview.
Oh, definitely. I think it is a worry. I think, if we pride ourselves on good race relations, which New Zealand has done perhaps wrongly over the years, then we must be thinking about how do we make sure we're giving people the sort of the stage on which to at least engage if they want to, and if there's nowhere to do that, then maybe we're sort of impacting on things like stronger communities.
Isn't the mall or the rugby stadium or sports stadium or the pub quiz enough for all those things to meet those needs? I haven't mentioned malls, but that's sometimes where you'll find this kind of socialising too, isn't it?
Definitely. And in fact, a student of mine has just been doing a really interesting thesis looking at Wainuiomata Mall in the Hutt and Johnsonville Mall and their role as a third place. And did a whole heap of interviews with the community. The community really strongly said, this is one of our key community places, you know. And yet the primacy of private property rights means that they have absolutely no influence over these places. So malls most definitely can be third places, but they're not enough if that's the only option, as in these two communities, it sounds like. There's probably others that people didn't talk about. And it's not enough if people can't influence the form and function of those places over time because they're kind of sitting in this private property bubble. And we sort of say, well, if it's private property, you know, nothing that anyone can say over that. It's got to be, you know, it's whatever the private property owner wants to do with that place.
One of the things that might drive us towards more of what you're talking about is people moving back into the towns and the central parts of towns and cities in New Zealand. Lambton Quay is still a bit of a desert in terms of once everyone's left on a Friday night, not until Monday morning. But at the other end of central Wellington, Cuba Street, lots of people moving in. And if you went for a walk up there on a Sunday night or even on a Sunday afternoon, it'd be a very different experience, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that's right. But I think what you want is not these deserts. Because at the moment it feels like there's a desert in Lambton Quay and there's a desert in, what suburb can I say? Desert in Nainai or whatever.
Okay. Nainai, she's just had to think of an example, okay? I know some very nice people in Nainai.
I know, so do I. In fact, I've just come from Nainai. It's a great place.
Okay.
but I know that it's a bit of a desert you know, on the streets in the evening because everyone's in their homes, you know, with their families. And there's not a huge amount of option to kind of linger.
Isn't that partly because the weather's crap a lot of the time and it's cold for a lot of the year?
Except that if you look at countries like Denmark and you go to Copenhagen, I went to Copenhagen in winter, freezing cold and their average temperatures are much less than Wellington's, for example. There's heaps of people on the street there, even with sort of pushing buggies and the babies have got hats on and scarves and the parents have got hats and scarves on, but everyone kind of goes out and they go to their cafe and they leave their buggy on the footpath and they bike and yeah. So I don't know if climate's necessarily a excuse for us not using the public realm.
The other thing I see happening is car parks being taken over by stallholders on Saturdays and Sundays in the central city for markets.
Mm.
Is that an example of what you're talking about? It's almost happening spontaneously. Well, not spontaneously, but you know, people are seeing, here's a space, here's a demand for something, we bring the stallholders in here and everyone meets at the market.
Yeah, I think that's got real potential for being a third place. I think I mean, Oldenburg would probably say they have to be quite static, like fixed places, but I actually think we probably need to sort of widen his definition of third place and think about these kind of more transitory, you know, ever-changing places that perhaps are kind of cyclical or whatever.
The reason I use that example is because I wanted to lead to this question to wrap up, which is, do these places have to be designed and planned for, or if there's a real need, will they just happen?
I think they need to be designed and planned for, definitely. I mean, I live in Northland, which seems to have about 26 pizza shops, but nowhere to linger. So, you know, you sort of...
We're talking about the suburb of Wellington, by the way.
Sorry, yes, not Northland.
In case people in Kaitaia are thinking, what the hell is she talking about?
Yeah. So I think, you know, there needs to be some kind of... I don't know, regulatory tool or as part of the district plan that says that it's actually really important for these suburban spaces to have places to linger, to, you know, to potentially bump into other people. We can't have, I mean, pizza shops are fine, but that plus a lingering spot is incredibly important.
Can you do that in low density suburbs?
It's much more difficult. I think density is a key issue. And as soon as you increase density, obviously you increase the number of people that can frequent your cafe or whatever it is. So it is tricky. But the, you know, the government's moving towards intensification in cities, and so alongside that, I would encourage them to be thinking about, yeah, fine to provide more housing, but let's provide the sort of social infrastructure to support that housing.
Rebecca, thank you very much for joining me this evening.
Kia ora.
Rebecca Kittle, senior lecturer in urbanism at Victoria University School of Architecture in Wellington. She'll be back with more thoughts on the design of our human spaces in a couple of months.